I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay. Thanks, Rob.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to part three of the Are You Going My Way series. It's been a little while since we've been at it, but we are back. Ben, are you ready to talk about ride sharing today?
That I am, Steve.
Well, I'm Steve, and I host a podcast called the History of the Papacy podcast. I have no particular expertise in this area. I'm just an interested amateur. My role will be as a moderator and to ask dumb questions as usual. Ben, you're an urban planner and a history podcaster. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what got you interested in these areas of transportation?
Hey, I've always been interested in transportation planning in particular, just in terms of the way you sort of get into planning if you're interested in how urban areas develop. And to me, it was always pretty obvious that transportation systems were the things that were sort of holding urban areas together. So that was my main area of interest.
We've done two of these episodes so far. So this is part three. It has been a little while since we talked, and I would definitely encourage everybody to go back and listen to that first one where we talked a lot about the basics of transportation and especially transporting people where it's can be very easy to transport people, and then in situations where it's more difficult. And a lot of the things that we discussed in that first episode will definitely be helpful for this one. We talked about the network effects and basics of how transportation worked and how systems like that can be very expensive and how they can become very congested, and how cars and different types of transportation work all together. We also discussed a little bit about electric vehicles and how their widespread adoption can be helpful in some ways and harmful in others. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the other technologies that have offered some ways to solve some of America's transportation problems, services like Uber and Lyft, the so-called ride sharing and gig economy. There's quite a few different ones, and we could call those microtransit, and we can also talk about microtransit and transportation network companies. We also things like Zipcars and similar services. So, Ben, what is it that these different companies can do and how do they fit into the system?
Well, I think I want to back up a little bit and just focus for one second on the end of your introduction there. There are so many names for this stuff, and it sort of gets to a lot of the confusion about what they even are. You've got the Uber and Lyft companies that call themselves, initially they called themselves ride sharing. Other people call them demand response services. And then people like me come up with jargony names like microtransit or transportation network companies. We often call them TNCs in meetings. So I'm probably going to throw that acronym out. Apologies in advance. And then the Zipcar companies, which sort of came a little bit earlier, they tend to call themselves car sharing services. And so as I answer your actual question, hopefully we can tease out what the differences are there.
Yeah, maybe we'll start with companies like Uber and Lyft first, because they're sort of their own genre, if you will.
Yeah.
They initially were called ride sharing, like you said, but they really aren't that anymore. It's not a situation where I'm driving downtown and it just so happens you're driving down, need to get downtown too, so we'll all go together.
Yeah.
It's sort of morphed from that. So maybe you can discuss those a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that was the original pitch. It was sort of like a hitchhiking app or something like that, that we could, the idea was that we could take advantage of the spare capacity in our cars to help provide efficient transportation services. Once it came time to find ways to monetize this stuff and make people feel secure, the business model just sort of evolved to where we are now, which is that at this point, relatively few people use ride-hailing services or TNCs to arrange sort of paid carpool type things. That's pretty rare. In fact, they sort of have put a bunch of effort into redeveloping that angle. And there's like special services you can join where you try and sign up for carpools within the, you know, Uber or Lyft umbrellas. But of course, what most people are doing is that basically people take time out of their day to make themselves available to sell rides to people. Some people do that full time. But what happens is that the company will decide that they're coming into an area. They'll establish an office. They'll recruit drivers. They have regular meetings with these drivers to go over company standards and policies. Individuals get trained, things like that. The drivers get to choose when they work, but they do get pressure from the company because the company is, you know, the company wants to make sure that they have 24-hour coverage, but particularly that they have coverage during, you know, big transportation peaks and stuff like that. When the driver is working, essentially they log in through the app, let the system know that they're willing to work. And then the drivers, when a customer tells the app that they want a ride, the app offers it to the drivers and the drivers accept or don't. It gets more complicated than this, obviously. From the point of view of the company, the drivers are contractors. They're considered independent contractors. They drive their own vehicles, and they pay for their own gas. And, of course, they pay for their own maintenance and wear and tear on their car. They get no benefits from the company in terms of health insurance or anything like that. And the company, the driver gets the fare paid by the customer, but the company gets a cut. There's recently been some scandals where some companies made it so that you could give the driver a tip, but it turned out that the company was just taking the tip. So there's all these issues within the business model. But basically, to summarize all of this, some people use their phone to ask for a ride. The company determines how much it's going to cost, and they offer that cost to the drivers, and the drivers agree to pay for the ride, or to provide the ride for that money.
It really is a quantum leap from where it began to where it is now, where they're essentially just taxis.
Oh, no, you can't say the they're taxis. Yeah. They're absolutely taxis. They just have a different dispatching system.
When Uber first started and it was catching on and it was still selling itself as the sharing, it had actually grown out of, I don't know if it was the person who started Uber or if Uber took this idea, but it was somebody who was, it was tool sharing.
Yeah.
If, you know, if I buy a drill that I use maybe 3 times in a year, I could put my drill out there for somebody to borrow.
Yeah. It was this whole period of sort of like using technology to eliminate the barriers for selling the spare capacity that we have in society. And it was all very sort of anarcho-libertarian utopian in a really, you know, charming way. It was wonderful in terms of their ideals. Of course, it didn't work.
Yeah, it was, you know, those times where they were quaint.
Yeah.
When you think.
And there's an element of like, you know, in retrospect, it's pretty easy to say, well, did they think that no one had tried that before? Like, but, you know, I guess you have to try when you have these new technologies.
I mean, that's the way that Airbnb went as well, that it was supposed to be just letting out a room and it's gone into basically hotels.
Yeah.
But aren't there apps where people can share their couch?
Yeah, couch surfing stuff. And I would argue that Airbnb and couch surfing, they still have a foot in the original intent more than the ride sharing apps do. But they're also less angrily vocal about that. So the funny thing is that if you talk to a representative of Uber or Lyft or any of those companies, they will swear up and down that they are not taxis, that there is a difference, and that you just don't understand what that is. And I am a transportation planning professional, and I disagree.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, maybe let's just quickly, what is a taxi?
Right.
And then how do taxis and Uber compare and contrast?
Sure, yeah. So etymologically, the term taxi cab refers to the device that taxis used or use to track the fare. So this is maybe something where Uber and Lyft have a leg to stand on if you're really pedantic about it. Basically, the taxi... So what the taxi calculator thing is that when you get in the cab, the driver hits a button on this device, and that device tracks how far they go and how long you're in the cab, and that is used to calculate what you end up owing when you get to where you're going. However, I mean, saying that taxis didn't necessarily imply just that little piece of technology seems really pedantic to me. So let's take a look at a bigger look at their business model. So taxi drivers lease very specific models of car from the company. So the company buys the car and then rents it to the driver. The driver pays for their own gas and their own maintenance. The drivers often have unions, but the company does not provide direct benefits. In many municipalities, taxis have a badge system where there are only a limited number of taxis that are allowed to operate in an area, and they sort of buy and sell that right. Right before Uber and Lyft came on the scene, some of these badges had become absurdly expensive in places like Manhattan. I will say that I don't know necessarily how ubiquitous the badge system is outside of New York, but certainly the New York example was kind of ludicrous. So the customers, in terms of the customer's experience of this whole thing, they can like walk outside their house and wave down a taxi as it's passing, or they can go to taxi stands. A lot of municipalities don't allow you to directly wave down a cab. It's sort of a unique thing in very dense urban areas that you can do that. So most people who are using a taxi call the company. They get put in touch with a dispatcher. They tell the dispatcher where they want to go. The dispatcher figures out which, they get on their radio and offer the fare to the drivers, and the driver who's closest or whatever will volunteer to take the fare. They'll tell the company that they're taking the fare, and then they'll drive and pick the person up and take them where they're going. Again, the fare is calculated by that doohickey on the dashboard. But that doesn't really matter to most people. The TNC companies claim that because they don't use the thingy on the dashboard, they have a different fare structure, and because the dispatching is done by computers, and because the drivers are independent contractors not driving a special vehicle, that this all adds up to them not being taxi companies.
It's interesting that taxis, especially in the big cities, almost have a guild-like structure where the government puts in certain restrictions that helps them, and then they help by paying for, you know, the fitting certain regulations.
Right. And the reason for that is that it didn't used to be regulated. You know, around the turn of the century, things had gotten completely out of hand. Anyone with a first it was horse and carts, and then it was cars in the 20s. You know, anyone who could get that stuff, which was, you know, most people, when you're talking about like Model Ts and stuff, could scrape together the money to get one of those things. And then it was just like a free for all. And there were some pretty serious downsides in terms of, you know, safety for the passengers, safety for the drivers, safety for the general public, just being on the street with these people who maybe weren't maintaining their vehicles and weren't sleeping. Because, of course, you know, as soon as you have an unregulated market like that, there's a certain race to the bottom that happens in terms of the fares, where, like, there's no barriers to entry and there's lots of competition. So, you know, it got to the point where the fare price had imploded, how it was being tracked wasn't regulated. And so, you know, riders, the passengers were getting ripped off, but then also it wasn't doing the taxi drivers any good either to be living like that. So, I forget exactly the sequence of events that led to it. Usually there's some nice crisis or another, but New York led the way in instituting the badge system. Again, not every municipality did the badge system, but it was understood that, like, there needs to be some regulation on this. And because of the way that the industry operated, I mean, it's one of these industries where, you know, the companies were really getting everybody... The companies were definitely raking it in, and the drivers were in a pretty bad place, you know, in terms of the power that they had in the market. So you sort of had this three-way negotiation between the public, as represented by the government, the taxi companies, and then the drivers' unions.
Then taxi cab drivers often need a special license as well.
Yes. Yeah, and that's part of the ultimate negotiated settlement. It wasn't just this badge system. It was also, you know, these are the cars. They have to be maintained. You have to be licensed. There needs to be some form of accountability for the driver to the passenger. This is how you're going to calculate fares, you know. And it gets to, like, nowadays we have issues with Americans with Disabilities Act issues, ADA issues. And so the taxi companies are supposed to provide a certain number of their vehicles that are wheelchair accessible. You know, the bigger vans that can have lifts and stuff like that. So there's all these regulations that help serve the public good. The flip side of it is that the taxi cab companies sort of have a monopoly is the wrong word, but like you said, a guild or an oligarchy, an oligarchic lock on a local area.
Then now aren't, in a lot of ways, the taxi cabs and the ride sharing, quote unquote, ride sharing companies are sort of blending together, where taxis are offering more services like set pricing and you can order on an app,
yeah,
et cetera.
I mean, it's the implicit point being made by the ride hailing companies was that, you know, the taxi industry basically hadn't changed since the 1950s. There were some minor tweaks in terms of the kinds of things they were expected to be able to do in terms of, you know, handicapped accessibility and things like that. But really, you know, this is the internet age. We all have smartphones and everything. And these companies didn't seem to be willing to adapt. And of course, now that they're facing this competition, they are adapting. The flip side of it is that these ride hailing companies are operating in direct violation of laws that exist. And the taxi drivers are furious because they're facing competition from people who are just violating the law. And the government has felt, or the municipal governments haven't felt like they could intervene for, you know, rightly or wrongly. They were afraid of, you know, these successful companies that were operating in this area. And these companies were using technobabble to explain why they weren't taxis. And, you know, a lot of these governments didn't feel like they could tell them that they were wrong at the time, I think. So however it happened, we're now in a situation where a lot of municipalities and ride sharing companies are both sort of tacitly agreeing that, you know, yes, ride sharing companies are different from taxis. We're all going to nod our heads and agree that this is true, because it would be really inconvenient if we had to turn around and try and enforce the law after, you know, 15 years of precedent has been set. But meanwhile, everybody knows that this is an incorrect situation and something needs to get done to sort of fix things. So I have no idea where that's going to go. It's not a sustainable situation.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It really is. It's a double-edged sword that the Ubers and the Lyfts, they're very convenient and they have changed the service in such a way where, you know, places, it was really hard to get a cab or rides like that in a lot of places that weren't the core of certain urban areas, which it's really changed that. I mean, you can get an Uber almost anywhere now and it's convenient and it's pretty safe. And that's one edge. And if the municipalities, and they have done that where they've tried to maybe make them conform to the law or banish them altogether, and it's been hugely unpopular.
You know, one by one, the bigger cities are cracking down. And I think ultimately it's a matter of time. But in the meantime, you know, the customers are really appreciating these services because, you know, I don't know if I said in the previous episodes, but my wife doesn't drive. And so she's either at the mercy of the bus system, which, you know, public transportation in this country has been critically underfunded for, you know, 50 to 100 years. And it can be really, really inconvenient, the wrong word. It can just be impossible sometimes, even if you're in an area with service. And so, you know, Uber and Lyft are really important parts of the transportation puzzle. The flip side of that is that, you know, these are people who are operating without benefits, without protections, and, you know, acting in direct competition with these taxi companies that are obeying the law. So it's a tough situation.
Yeah. Also that, you know, that's really an effective regulatory taking where they're saying that a company that, you know, that for how many ever years, you know, 80 to 100 years getting on now, that municipalities have said that this industry is very highly regulated, and then they're just letting in somebody who's doing essentially the same thing,
basically
not regulated. You're basically punishing the company that you were giving that to, and that's a really tough knot to unwind.
So I have no idea where it's going to go. I honestly think, you know, the flip side of it also is that the taxi companies, part of the reason they were so resistant to innovation is that, you know,
they didn't have to.
They didn't have to because they were this locked in oligarchy / monopoly / whatever. And, you know, they were subject to, in some cases, an absolutely ludicrous amount of regulation. And, you know, a big part of it is the way that they related to their drivers too, because these weren't, even with the taxi companies, they weren't really employees. So, you know, the drivers have some power in terms of they have an ability to resist changes, but they don't really have a stake in the game to a certain extent, other than, you know, keeping things going the way they are so that I can keep making whatever I'm making right now. And any kind of change might be seen as threatening under those circumstances. So, I mean, both, it's sort of a pox on all their houses. You know, I would think that the regulations that the taxi companies operate under need to get relaxed somewhat. But also, the government needs to enforce the law and start cracking down on these TNCs.
Now, where do these cars, like you said, they're in certain situations, you know, they probably are more heavily utilized than they maybe have to be because of the, you know, the structure of the mass transit system. But
yeah,
buses do have their limitations that they run a certain set schedule.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they're not going to be, you know, even in the best of circumstances, there's
right.
still, you know, a couple of, you know, there's a certain walk from, you have to get from your home to a set station
right.
or stop, where these cars are fitting the role where a taxi cab or a TNC, they'll pick you up at your house and they'll drop you off directly at your destination. How does that fit into a planning of a transportation system in at large?
You know, ultimately we don't really know yet, because this is all kind of new. What it looks like is that it is, to a certain extent, they're operating in competition with public transportation. Certainly there's a lot of trips that are happening that are outside of the kind of place that could be serviced economically by a public transportation system. But they're certainly, if you talk to people in the public transportation industry, a lot of them will say that they've been seeing their ridership rates go down and they want to blame TNCs. I don't agree, or at least not totally. Anytime you have a period where the economy is doing pretty well, public transportation usage kind of will plateau or shrink. Having the additional issue of the TNCs there probably isn't helping, but I think there's a larger issue of, you know, the economy is growing and they haven't changed the public transportation services being provided. That's not necessarily what you asked, though.
It seems like they fit in more where convenience.
Yeah.
Is more important at that time than maybe cost, or
yeah,
probably more so cost than anything. If time is not a factor, where I could take, if it's a regular thing, I could take the bus to work,
right?
And that would be much, much cheaper than doing a ride share to work, or you know, a taxi or a Uber to work. But if I need to get to the airport by a certain time and I have a trunk full of luggage that I don't want to lug onto the bus and walk to the bus stop, then convenience is worth paying for over that.
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. Yeah, in terms of the way my family ends up using TNCs, for example, it's usually, you know, my wife doesn't choose doctors that she can't get to by bus. But that said, if she's got 3 or 4 appointments in a day, you know, scattered all over the metro area, you need, you know, sometimes you need to take an Uber between some of those because it's just not going to be fast enough to take the bus. You know, there's other issues where, like, you know, there's doctors that are on bus lines or, you know, doctors, whatever, some appointment or whatever, that are on bus lines, but they're on a different bus line. A lot of public transportation systems end up operating on a hub and spokes model. There's a strong move away from that now. I wish people would get on that. But in the meantime, the idea is that, you know, even though the place we're trying to go is, you know, a 5-minute drive away, to get there, it takes 2.5 hours on the bus because you have to go all the way downtown, get on a different bus and come back out, you know? So those are the kinds of places where Ubers and Lyfts end up coming in as necessary or at least highly convenient parts of the transportation system. Ideally, though, there is a role theoretically that could be played by TNCs in terms of, you know, getting you to a bus stop or something like that. And this is actually something, again, that is done. You know, you get on the commuter rail and the place you're going is sort of not on the commuter rail, but to get there, you'd need to go all the way downtown. You know, you'd need to stay on the commuter rail for an hour and a half, get to the downtown, and then turn around and take a 40-minute subway ride out to wherever it is you're going. So you, instead of doing that, you take the commuter rail halfway and then get on an Uber or something like that. The MBTA in Massachusetts has experimented with doing things like there are community college campuses where they just can't find a way to service them by bus. And so they'll just give students a subsidized, they'll say, you know, show your student ID to the Uber driver and the ride's free, or the ride's on us, or kind of some, you know, you pay a bus fare. Those things are happening, but it's like each one of them needs to be negotiated. And ultimately, it's just so much more convenient to just say, I just want to go here, rather than taking public transportation first.
I could also see in places where they have a well-developed rail situation in a lot of cities where you get from the suburbs, but then parking at the rail stations is, I mean, when I had to do that, the parking was hell.
Yeah, they can be really bad. You know, I remember one of the busiest train stops in the New Jersey transit system is just, it's just a parking garage in the middle of a cornfield. But it's so, you know, it's so horrible to drive into New York City that the morning commuters will all drive to that cornfield and take the train from there. And, you know, that parking lot fills up, and then there's people parking illegally and taking the parking tickets. Or like there'll be nearby, landowners who will sell off, you know, spots in their driveway for $20 a pop or something. You know, these things definitely happen, and you know, an Uber or a Lyft kind of thing could really relieve the tension for. And this is like the last mile problem that you often see planners talk about, is like how do you economically serve getting people from the main trunk line to their door or wherever it is they're going. TNCs, and I mean, taxi cabs used to do that. You know, that was what they were for, to a certain extent, for, you know, maybe not for an everyday trip to work kind of thing, but you know, there was a certain, you know, when I was growing up, we took taxis when we were like going on vacation and needed to get to the train or something like that. It was like maybe a couple times a year kind of thing.
Yeah, that's probably where Uber and Lyft fit in with, say, somebody like my lifestyle the most is I use it almost never at home.
Right.
But I would use it. I use it quite often when traveling.
Right.
Because then it's, you know, to get a hold, you know, learn a bus schedule or to have an app on your phone. It's, you know, again, it's a time versus money issue.
Yeah.
And then I think that I've seen it where people will use it in town is often when maybe they're drinking.
Yeah.
Or there's a chance where taxi cabs did fill that role, but they oftentimes, I mean, almost never were as convenient as Uber.
Yeah,
where you can bring it up on your phone. And
yeah, that's one where basically the only thing that's different in terms of the business model is just, you know, is just that you have a smartphone and you're comfortable using it. But yeah, the public transportation often ends at like 11:30. The bars are open till 2. this is something where a well-functioning public transportation system wouldn't do that. That, like, you know, in other countries, the public transportation runs until everyone's home from work, including the people who work at the bars. So, given the system that we have, you know, Uber, Lyft, and taxis, fulfill a very important role in terms of keeping people who've been drinking off the roads. That's for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about some of the benefits of ride sharing and TNC type technologies. What are maybe some of the downsides? We've also discussed some of the downsides, but maybe hit a couple of the big downsides as they see them,
right?
As you see them.
From an economics and public policy standpoint, we touched on the issues in terms of the fact that these, you know, the rule of law is being damaged and the issues that implies for taxi companies and taxi drivers. Certainly, a related thing that we've touched on a little bit, but which I would emphasize is that if these companies are actually operating in competition with public transportation, that's not necessarily good, because public transportation is cheaper. It's just generally better for the environment and for society in general. If it could be properly funded so that it could properly compete, that would be great. But in the meantime, you know, if these TNCs are, public transportation companies have dealt with a lot of competition and lack of support in the last 50, 60 years, and having just one more thing come along to hollow out their market isn't necessarily a public good. Okay, so one benefit that we didn't touch on properly, I think, there's a couple big benefits in terms of the rider doesn't necessarily need to own their own car to take advantage of Ubers and Lyfts and stuff like that, which, you know, for people who can't own their cars or for people who aren't able to own or operate vehicles safely, you know, that's a good thing generally. And that has, that does have environmental and social benefits that we can talk about in terms of eliminating parking. It certainly would, if you could make it so that, if you take this idea to its extreme and say that everybody was just using Ubers and Lyfts and stuff, then you could get rid of parking minimums and things like that, which arguably is a good idea anyway. But, so much of the space in, you know, urban areas is taken up by parking that only gets used part of the time. Or even if it's used, you're talking about just storing a car that's not doing anything. And this is potentially very valuable real estate in urban areas. So having it so that the car didn't need to be parked next to the passenger all the time would be potentially an efficiency in terms of public policy.
You know, thinking about that socially as well, that it, you know, in a system where the public transportation system is how it is, that's giving people who otherwise might have to walk several blocks to get to a public transportation situation and then walk several blocks, you know, yeah, some significant amount of time to get to wherever they're going.
Yeah.
You know, if it's somebody who needs to go to medical treatment,
right,
or things that just aren't even generally served under the best of circumstances,
yeah,
under public transportation, it's giving them a door-to-door,
yeah,
service.
So there's a whole galaxy of services that operate under the heading of non-emergency medical transportation. So basically any kind of transportation for a medical service that doesn't require you to be in an ambulance. People who qualify under the Americans with Disabilities Act as being on disability have access to paratransit services, is what it's called, through the public transportation company in every municipality in the country. If there is a fixed route transportation service, the company has to provide a service where there is a handicapped accessible vehicle that will come to their door, pick them up, and then take them to where they're going, so long as it's within a quarter mile of that fixed route public transit line. In addition to that, people who qualify for Medicare and Medicaid can often get access to similar services that aren't limited to being within a quarter mile of the public transportation line. some of these services are really good. Most of them are mediocre at best, and a lot of them are just terrible, just really, really bad. Like, as the worst things that we could say about taxis are just magnified dozens of times in terms of a lot of these non-emergency medical transportation services. And the worst part is of course, is that they're funded by, you know, federal Medicaid money. But, you know, so what has often happened is that in these situations, doctors will actually get charged if their patients miss an appointment, which is absurd, but that is a thing that happens. So what will happen is that the doctors will get fed up with these publicly provided services and just call an Uber for their patients because it's cheaper for them to pay the fare than you know, eat the cost of the missed appointment or whatever. So it's yeah, there's a bunch of really weird stuff in the non-emergency medical transportation area where the way the regulations are structured is just so bad. And it's just, it's pushing people to using Ubers and Lyfts in these circumstances. That said, one of the other things, one of the other criticisms you can make of the TNCs is that they don't have to be handicapped accessible. So for a lot of the people who need this kind of, you know, flexible, timely, non-emergency medical transportation service, Uber and Lyft just won't work for them because, you know, if they're in a wheelchair or something, the, you know, Uber and Lyft just won't have wheelchair accessible vehicles. So that's kind of a flip side of that.
And then environmentally, which we talked about the last time, they kind of seem, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, to maybe come out in the wash, would you say? Because they are just normal cars. So maybe they're hybrids, maybe they're electric, but probably not.
Yeah.
In many cases, maybe they're hybrids, but they still, a lot of the, maybe you can discuss some of the impacts of where they're slightly helpful and harmful to the environment, maybe more so or less so than normal automobiles.
So in terms of the beneficial side, like we mentioned, you know, having parking spaces in an urban area is pretty bad for the world. It's impervious surface, so that increases flooding risk. It increases the amount of water that sewage systems have to handle and treat. And, you know, it's just this huge cost to society. Plus, if people were able to not own their own cars, they'd probably walk more. Studies sort of indicate that, which would be better for human health. On the other hand, TNCs are normal cars, so they're producing the same amount of emissions as normal cars for the same trip. What's different is that when I, you know, get out of my house in the morning, get in my car and drive to work, and then park at work, my car is just doing the trip from my house to work. What you often get with the TNCs is TNCs and taxis is a thing called deadhead miles, where the vehicle is just sort of driving around waiting for a fare.
Maybe trolling, might not in the internet sense, but in the fishing sense, driving around to,
you know,
find another fare or get closer to something where there might be potential for a fare.
Exactly. The other thing is that there's new kinds of trips that are being stimulated by these TNCs. You know, it's nice that my only food delivery options have moved beyond Chinese and pizza. So now you have, you know, Grubhub and Uber Eats and all these companies doing delivery with Uber drivers, where basically the fare that they're taking is a box of food.
Yeah, that's an interest. I didn't even think of that, but that's an interesting new aspect of it. Mm-hmm.
And what it's doing is just generating trips that didn't exist before. There's also package delivery things and things along those lines. These things are great for the consumer often. But what we're seeing, you know, when you factor all this stuff in between the deadhead miles, the new kinds of trips and things like that, there's been a very good study out of Boston that shows that these companies operating are causing the vehicle miles traveled in the urban area to just go up in a way that's not related to the economy by itself or the population by itself. It's just, you know, there's just more miles happening because this is, there's new ways to use cars, which means that the system in general is going to get more crowded, more congested, and there's more pollution.
That's an, it, that is an interesting, the, where you bring up new travel needs, if you, I mean, that's not a need, but restaurants that didn't, that were never takeaway. If you were to go there, you went there and then you went home, where now is, well, you know, not, I mean, if you were going to drive to a restaurant that otherwise wouldn't have delivered, I guess you'd still be driving there.
Right.
But I mean, in doing that, they're potentially gaining new business, which is an upside. You know, how would you deal with the situation where the necessity of more car mileage? I mean, you could, I mean, I would say in general, that is a benefit that people have a new service available to them.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly, there's a benefit there. It's just, you have to factor that in against, you know, what the cost to the transportation system and everything like that. And it's not like, you know, people couldn't order food before. It's just the choices were more limited and things operated at a much more close scale. Like the local Chinese and pizza places would, they would usually have a 1 mile limit or something like that. Whereas now, you know, cause that guy doesn't need to get back to base necessarily, he can just keep taking Grubhub orders out all over the city. So as long as he can,
there has, you know, there has to be a story of why Chinese and pizza in particular
there is,
gravitated towards delivery.
There is probably a different show, but it is very interesting the sort of the culinary anthropological angle on this stuff. You know, long story short, they were types of food that weren't valued. So they were sold cheap. So you needed turnover. So, you know, people in those industries put in the effort to develop the infrastructure for doing deliveries before Grubhub existed. So, you know, no, but pizza was always like a working man's food. Like the whole point of it was, you know, you can get off the work site, go down to the end of the block, grab a 99-cent slice and just eat it and you'll be full. And you can go back to work. And Chinese food was just weird and strange and foreign, so you couldn't charge too much for it. Anyway, that's a whole nother. Yeah, that's a...
Maybe we'll add that as an addendum.
Yeah.
The evolution of Chinese food in America. Yeah. That sounds like a show in and of itself.
There's a couple of great documentaries on it on Netflix, but anyway.
Now, if we get into some of our conclusions for today, because we're putting the brakes on figuratively, that we're not talking about a major part of ride sharing, of where ride sharing might go in the future. But maybe we can just take a little taste of this before, because this will probably be a show by itself, is that, you know, kind of the dream of TNCs is that one day they'll be autonomous vehicles that will pick people up, drop them off, and that will eliminate a lot of the problems that of a actual human being driving the car will, and that they won't be gas vehicles because they won't have to do the dead, what did you call it? Deadheading or you know, the trolling or sharking to get new fares. Just, I mean, very briefly to give us a taste, is that pie in the sky at this point?
I mean, to a certain extent, you need to tune into the next episode where we talk about autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
But assuming that technology works out, there's sort of a couple different ways this could go, where it sort of ends up depending on how willing people are to get rid of their own cars and rely on these kinds of services for, you know, a substantial part of their trips, how they would end up working with public transportation systems and things like that. it's as the answer to that question is as much about public policy choices and what the market ends up doing as it is about the technology, which means that there's a lot of unknowns there.
Now, we didn't plan this, but I have one question. Now that we've talked about the basics of transportation, we've discussed this TNC or ride sharing that's filled in one of the gaps that's left by the public transportation system. If you were given all the money in the world to design the perfect transportation system, let's say for a medium-sized city, because I think the big cities in a lot of ways that they're unique in a way, but maybe a medium-sized city that has suburbs that is definitely more reliant on automobiles.
Right.
What would you do to design a system that could serve that place much better than it's being served now by personal automobile usage?
So there's a concept, there's a couple concepts that I would ideally love to integrate into this sort of theoretical medium-sized city. The first one is actually an app-based system, which is sort of similar to what the TNCs have done, but it's called, the general idea is called Mobility as a Service, or MaaS. The Finns have really developed this strongly in Helsinki and some other places in Finland, but it's spreading, it's catching on. But basically the idea is every sort of mode that you can buy access to is integrated into one app. You can pay for whatever you need to pay for through the app, and it just calculates out what the cheapest or the fastest or whatever method for you to travel through the entire system would be. And then you just select your trip and then you go. That said, you know, these TNC type services are going to win, you know, 9 times out of 10, unless we throw some serious love at our public transportation systems. And I think, you know, I referenced this a little bit, but one of the big things that we need to do for public transportation systems is get past the hub and spokes to more decentralized is the wrong word, because ultimately you're always going to be serving a central place, but systems that don't only have single points of failure where people can transfer, so that people don't all need to go into the downtown to get to where they're going. And probably they would need to be up using a pulse-based timing system so that people can reliably make their transfers and then, you know, go wherever they're going. Because that, you know, what we're basically doing with the modern public transportation system is saying that people hate transferring, and they do for a bunch of reasons, but therefore all transfers are bad. People should want to transfer as little as possible. And therefore, you know, essentially we have networks with as few turns as possible, which makes it not so much a network as it is, you know, a line. Or as close to a line as you can get it to be. So I'm rambling here a little bit, but you know, the ideal would be I need to go from where I am to somewhere else in the metro area, but which is also a suburb. I don't really need to go downtown. So I punch this in my app. A TNC shows up outside my door. I get on that. It takes me to a bus, which takes me to another bus, and you know, it's a pretty seamless transfer. And then from that bus, I get on another TNC and get to my doctor's appointment on time. You know, that kind of thing. And you know,
and those TNCs would be, you think ideally would be integrated into the system, in that they would be a part of the,
or at least, you know,
the agency.
You know, if they're not part of the agency, then they're connected into the app so that you can just pay, you know, you hit one button and you pay everybody, you know, that kind of thing. If that makes any sense. I think ideally you wouldn't need the TNC in most situations, but you know, for some suburban areas, it becomes, you know, very difficult to economically serve them. So for them, you might need a TNC, or, you know, if you have someone with mobility issues, having a taxi be part of the trip, you know, to serve their mobility challenges, that would be, you know, a thing that maybe the app would be able to deal with, and it is able to deal with in the Finnish example. So that's sort of the future, the utopian future of all this, if everything works out nicely. And things are properly resourced, that would be the star that we're sailing toward.
Well, I think we would definitely hit some important aspects of ride sharing and this aspect of the transportation system. And we will definitely talk about some other aspects, very interesting aspects of the transportation system. I think that this would... I know that at least a couple of people have been very interested in this series, so I would definitely highly suggest them, you know, people who are interested in this, to send in questions.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd be happy to answer things like that.
So we'll be talking a little bit more about autonomous vehicles, and maybe we'll even get into something that's not directly involved, but kind of involved in zoning,
yes,
which I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah. Land use is a key part of, you know, we sort of talked about how I got into all this. You know, you realistically can't separate how land use is done from transportation. They're tied at the hip. But it can often be hard to conceptualize that link. So I'm looking forward to talking about that as well.
All right, Ben, if people want to find out more about your podcast, I guess you wouldn't say it's your day job.
my other hobby.
Your other hobby. What would you say? How can we get to learn more about your podcast?
So my show is a history podcast about the wars of religion in Europe and how Europe got modern. It is called Wittenberg to Westphalia, The Wars of the Reformation. You can find it wherever good podcasts are given away for free. And you can go to my website, wittenbergtowestphaliapodcast.weebly.com. I'm also on Facebook. There's a fan group. There's a show page. And then I'm on Twitter at W2W Podcast.
And if you want to learn, I'm also a history podcaster. My podcast is the History of the Papacy podcast, which is a podcast about the popes of Rome and Christian Church. And you can learn more about that at atozhistorypage.com, atozhistorypage.com. I want to thank you, Ben, for coming on again. We'll definitely do this again.
Great.
And I will see you next time.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.